Your Gulfstream V is perfectly acceptable. Please do not upgrade to the GVI yet, at least until Yolanda Kwok takes delivery of hers. She will be furious if you get one before she does and will block your Chinese Athletic Association membership application. Dining. The restaurants that you customarily patronize are deplorable. They are filled with nothing but expats, soap opera stars, social climbers, and most disagreeable of all, foodies. As part of my new campaign to associate you only with establishment circles, you can no longer risk being seen at any trendy culinary destinations. If a restaurant is less than 2 years old or has been featured in Hong Kong Tattle or Pinnacle magazine in the past 18 months, I consider it trendy. Please see Appendix B for a list of approved dining clubs and restaurants with private dining rooms. 6 months from now, if I feel that you have reached a certain threshold of social acceptability, I will arrange for you to be snapped by paparazzi eating a bowl of wonton noodles at a Thai Pai Tong. An open-air roadside food stall. The Thai Pai Tong, where Karina stages all her paparazzi shots, is a particularly picturesque one located on St. Francis Yard, opposite the Club Monaco men's concept shop. This will do wonders for your image, and I can already picture the headline. Social goddess unafraid to dine with the masses. Social life. Your social resurrection will first begin with social death. For the next 3 months, you will completely disappear from the scene. Take a trip. Spend time with your child. Or why not both? You will therefore refrain from attending social functions held at any retail establishment or designer boutique. Until the right people begin inviting you. An invitation from the PR firm is not acceptable. A handwritten note from Mr. Dries Van Noten requesting the honor of your presence is. You will also refrain from all random receptions, gala dinners, annual balls, fundraising benefits, charity auctions, cocktail parties in aid of anything, polo matches, tastings, or any other events that you would instinctually feel compelled to attend. After your 3 month purgatory, we will slowly reintroduce you to the world in a series of carefully choreographed appearances. Depending on how well you perform, I may orchestrate further invitations to select events in London, Paris, Jakarta, and Singapore. Dipping your toes in the international scene will further enhance your reputation as one to watch. Note, Ada Poon didn't begin to receive invitations to Lady Ladurie's annual garden party until she was seen attending Colin Koo and Araminta Lee's wedding in Singapore. Travel. I know you've been going to Dubai, Paris, and London for your holidays, but that's what every common jet setter in Hong Kong does these days. To stand out from the crowd, you need to begin traveling to new locales to demonstrate that you are someone of originality and interest. This year, I suggest that you plan a tour of famous religious pilgrimage sites, such as the Shrine of Our Lady of Fatima in Portugal, the Sanctuary of Lourdes in France, and Santiago de Compostela in Spain. Be sure to post pictures of these places on your Facebook. In this way, even if you are photographed biting into a Galician ham croquette, people will still associate you with the Blessed Virgin Mother. If this trip goes well, we can organize a visit to Oprah schools in South Africa next year. Philanthropic affiliations. In order to truly ascend to a higher social stratosphere, it is important for you to become affiliated with one charitable cause. My mother, of course, has long been associated with the Hong Kong Horticultural Society. Connie Meng has a lock on all the art museums. Ada Poon owns cancer. And in a brilliant maneuver, Jordana Chu was able to wrestle control of irritable bowel syndrome from Unity Ho last year at the Serenity Colon Ball. We can discuss some of your personal interests and decide if there is anything suitable that dovetails with our goals. Otherwise, I will select a cause from whatever available options remain so that we can send a unified message about what you stand for. Spiritual life. When I feel you are ready, I will introduce you to Hong Kong's most exclusive church, which you are to begin attending on a regular basis. Before you protest, please note that this is one of the cornerstones to my methodology of social rehabilitation. Your true spiritual affiliations do not concern me. It does not matter to me if you are Taoist, Daoist, Buddhist, or worship Meryl Streep. But it is absolutely essential that you become a regular praying, tithing, communion taking, hands in the air waving, Bible study, fellowship attending member of this church. This has the added bonus of ensuring that you will be qualified for burial at the most coveted Christian cemetery on Hong Kong Island, rather than having to suffer the eternal humiliation of being interred at one of those lesser cemeteries on the Kowloon side. Culture and conversation. Your chief handicap to social success will always be the fact that you did not attend the right kindergarten with any of the right crowd. This eliminates you from participating in 70% of the conversations that occur during dinner parties at the best houses. You do not know the gossip that goes back to these people's childhoods. And this is the secret. They are all still completely obsessed with what happened when they were 5. Who was fat or thin? Who wet her pants during choir practice? Whose father shut down Ocean Park for the day so that he could have a huge birthday party? Who spilled red bean soup all over whose party dress when they were 6 years old and still has not been forgiven? 20% of the other conversations at parties consists of complaining about mainlanders. So by default, you will not be able to join in that discussion. Another 5% is earmarked for complaining about the chief executive. So, in order to distinguish yourself in the remaining meager 5% conversational window, you must either have one hell of a good stock tip or learn to become a scintillating conversationalist. Beauty fades, but wit will keep you on the invitation list to all the most exclusive parties. To that end, you will embark on a reading program that I have designed specifically for you. You will also attend one cultural event per week. This can include, but is not restricted to, plays, opera, classical music concerts, ballet, modern dance, performance art, literary festivals, poetry readings, museum exhibitions, foreign language or independent films, and art openings. Hollywood movies, Cirque du Soleil, and canto pop concerts do not count as culture. Reading list. I notice many magazines, but not a single book in your entire house, with the exception of a Chinese language translation of Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In, found in one of the maid's bedrooms. You will therefore complete one book per fortnight, with the exception of Trollope, where you will be allowed 3 weeks per book. As you read these books, you will hopefully come to understand and appreciate why I'm making you read them. The books are to be read in the following order. Snobs by Julian Fellowes. The Piano Teacher by Janice Y.K. Lee. People Like Us by Dominic Dunn. The Power of Style by Annette Tapert and Diana Atkins. This is out of print. I will lend you my copy. Pride and Avarice by Nicholas Coleridge. The Song Dynasty by Sterling Seagrave. Freedom by Jonathan Franzen. Take that out. DV by Diana Vreeland. A Princess Remembers, The Memoirs of the Maharani of Jaipur by Gayatri Devi. Jane Austen, complete works beginning with Pride and Prejudice. Edith Wharton, The Custom of the Country, The Age of Innocence, The Buccaneers, The House of Mirth must be read in strict order. You will understand why when you finish the last one. Vanity Fair by William Makepeace Thackeray. Anna Karenina by Leo Tolstoy. Bride's Head Revisited by Evelyn Waugh. Anthony Trollope, all the books in the Palliser series, beginning with Can You Forgive Her? I shall do an assessment when you have completed these books to see whether you are ready to attempt some light Proust. Final note. There's no easy way to put this.
We need to talk about Bernard.
None of our goals will be effective if people are under the impression that your husband is somehow incapacitated, in a coma, or has become your sex slave in a dungeon. That is the latest rumor going around. We need to orchestrate a very public appearance with your husband and daughter very soon. Let's discuss the options tomorrow at the Mandarin over tea and scones. Chapter 2 Rachel and Nick, Shanghai, June 2013. And this, the general manager said with a flourish, is your living room. Rachel and Nick walked through the foyer and into a room with double-height ceilings and a grand Art Deco-style fireplace. One of the associates in the general manager's entourage pushed a button, and the sheer curtains in front of the tall picture window parted silently to reveal a breathtaking view of the Shanghai skyline.
No wonder you call this the Majestic Suite, Nick said.
Another associate popped open a bottle of Dutch champagne and began pouring the bubbly into a pair of tall flutes. To Rachel, the sprawling hotel suite felt like a decadent box of chocolates. From the black marble bathroom with its oval soaking tub to the ridiculously plush pillows on the bed, every corner was just waiting to be savored. Our yacht is at your disposal, and I would highly recommend a late afternoon cruise so that you can see the city transition from day to night.
We'll definitely keep that in mind,
Nick said, eyeing the plush sofa longingly. Could these lovely people please just leave so I can kick off my shoes and crash for a bit? Please let us know if there's anything else we can do to make your stay more enjoyable, the manager said, placing his hand on his chest and making an almost imperceptible bow before discreetly exiting the room. Nick plopped down on the sofa lengthwise, grateful to be able to stretch out after their 15-hour flight from New York.
Well, this is a surprise.
I know. Can you believe this place? I'm pretty sure the bathroom alone is larger than a whole apartment. I thought our hotel in Paris was something else, but this is on a whole other level, Rachel gushed as she returned to the living room. They were supposed to be staying with her father for the first couple of weeks of their vacation in China, but upon landing at Pudong International Airport, they were greeted at the gate by a man in a gray three-piece suit who had a note from Bao Gaoliang. Rachel took the piece of paper out of her purse and read it again. Written in Mandarin script in bold black ink, the note translated to, Dear Rachel and Nick, I trust you had a good flight. My apologies that I am unable to greet you at the airport myself, but I had to be in Hong Kong at the last minute and will only be returning later today. Since you are now officially on your honeymoon, I felt it would be much more fitting for you to spend your first days at the Peninsula Hotel as my guest. It will certainly be far more romantic than my house. Mr. Tin will speed your way through passport control, and the Peninsula has sent a car to take you to the hotel. Have a relaxing afternoon, and I look forward to introducing you to your family at a celebratory dinner tonight. I will contact you with more details before the evening. But let's plan on meeting at 7 p.m. Yours truly, Bao Gaoliang. Nick noticed Rachel's face light up as she reread the letter, her eyes skimming over the words, Your family, for the umpteenth time. Taking another sip of the champagne, he said, It was so cool of your father to arrange all this for us. Very thoughtful.
Wasn't it? It's all a bit over the top. From this ginormous suite to the Rolls that picked us up at the airport. I felt a little embarrassed to be riding in it, didn't you?
Nah, the new Phantoms are perfectly discreet. Colin's grandmother had a vintage silver cloud from the 1950s that looked like it came straight from Buckingham Palace. Now that was embarrassing to ride in.
Well, I'm still not used to all this, but I guess this is how the Bows live.
As if reading her mind, Nick asked, How are you feeling about tonight?
I'm excited to meet everyone.
Nick remembered the hints his mother had made about the Bows back in Santa Barbara, and he had shared all the details of that conversation with Rachel a few days after their wedding. At that time, Rachel had said,
I'm happy that my father and his family have done well, but it really makes no difference to me whether they are rich or poor.
I just wanted you to know what I know. It's part of my new full disclosure policy, Nick had said with a smile.
Huh. Thanks.
Well, I'm a lot more comfortable navigating around the richy rich crowd thanks to you. I've already gone through a baptism of fire with your family. Don't you think I'm ready for anything now? You survived my mother. I think everything else from here on out is a piece of cake, Nick had laughed. I just want you to be fully aware of what you're getting yourself into this time.
Rachel had given him a thoughtful look. You know, I'm really going to try to approach this with no illusions. I know it'll take a while to get to know my new family. I imagine it's just as much of a shock for my brother and my stepmother as it is for me. They probably have issues out the wazoo about all of this, and I'm not expecting to bond with them overnight. It's enough for me to know they exist and to meet them.
Now that they were actually on Chinese soil, Nick could sense that Rachel wasn't feeling as laid back as she had been in Santa Barbara. He could feel her nervous energy even as she lay nestled against him on the sofa, both of them trying to battle through their jet lag. Even though she tried to play it cool, Nick knew how much she longed to be accepted by this newfound family of hers. He had grown up rooted in a long-established lineage. The hallways of Tyersall Park had always been hung with ancestral portraits in ancient rosewood frames. And in the library, Nick had spent many a rainy afternoon paging through volumes of hand-bound books containing intricate family trees. The Youngs had documented their ancestors going all the way back to AD 432, and it was all there in the brittle, brown pages of these ancient tomes. He wondered what it was like for Rachel to grow up not knowing a thing about her father, about the other half of her family. A soft buzz interrupted his thoughts.
I think someone's at the door, Rachel said with a yawn, as Nick got up reluctantly to open it. Delivery for Ms. Chu,
the green-uniformed bellman said cheerily. He entered the suite pulling a luggage cart groaning with stacks of immaculately wrapped boxes. Behind him was another bellboy, with a second luggage cart packed full of cartons. What's all this? Nick asked. The bellboy smiled and handed over an envelope. Scrawled on a plush creamy note card was,
Welcome to Shanghai. Thought you could use some essentials. Cheers, C.
It's from Carlton, Rachel exclaimed in surprise. She opened the first box and found four different jams nestled against the packing hay. Seville orange marmalade, red currant jelly, nectarine compote, lemon and ginger curd. Stamped on the minimalist glass jars in elegant white type with the words Daylesford Organic.
Oh, Daylesford is an organic farm in Gloucestershire owned by my friends the Bamfords. They make the most glorious foods. Are all the boxes from them?
Nick asked, duly impressed. Rachel opened another carton and found it full of bottles of sparkling apple and bilberry juice.
Who's even heard of bilberries? She remarked.
As the two of them dove into the boxes, they discovered that Carlton had, for all intents and purposes, supplied them with Daylesford's entire product line. There were crackers with sea salt, shortbreads, and biscuits of dizzying variety to go along with the fine cheeses, farm Shetland Isles smoked salmon, and exotic chutneys. And there were sparkling wines, Cabernet Francs, and bottles of whole milk to wash it all down. Rachel stood amid the open boxes in astonishment.
Can you believe all this? There's enough stuff here to last us for a year.
Whatever we can't eat, we'll save for the zombie apocalypse. I must say, Carlton seems to be a rather generous fella.
That's putting it mildly. What a sweet welcome gift.
I can't wait to meet him, Rachel said excitedly.
Judging by his taste, I think I'm going to like him.
Now what should we try first? The white chocolate-dipped lemon biscuits or the chocolate-dipped ginger biscuits?
Bao Residence, Shanghai, earlier that morning. Gao Liang was on his way upstairs to shower after his morning jog when he encountered two maids coming down with several pieces of black and tan Tramontano luggage.
"Whose bags are those?"
he asked one of the maids.
"Mrs. Bao, sir,"
the girl replied, not daring to make eye contact with him.
"Where are you taking them?"
"Just out to the car, sir. They are for Mrs. Bao's trip."
Gao Liang headed into his bedroom, where he found his wife seated at her dressing table, putting on a pair of opal and diamond earrings.
"Where are you off to?" he asked.
"Hong Kong."
"I didn't know you had a trip planned today."
"It's a last-minute thing. There are some problems at the Xun Wan factories I need to sort out,"
Xiaoyan replied.
"But Rachel and her husband are arriving today."
"Oh, was that today?"
Xiaoyan said.
"Yes, we have a private room booked at the Whampoa Club tonight."
"I'm sure dinner will be very good. Be sure to order the drunken chicken."
"You won't be back in time?"
Gao Liang said, a little surprised.
"I'm afraid not."
Gao Liang sat down on the chaise lounge beside his wife, knowing full well why she was making this sudden trip.
"I thought you said you were okay with all this."
"For a while, I thought I was,"
Xiaoyan said slowly, letting her voice trail off as she methodically wiped one of the earring posts with a cotton ball soaked in disinfectant.
"But now that it's really happening, I've realized I'm not comfortable with any of it."
Gao Liang sighed. Since his reunion with Carrie and Rachel back in March, he had spent many a long night trying to placate his wife. Xiaoyan had been shocked, of course, by the bombshell he had dropped after returning from California, but over the past 2 months, he thought he had succeeded in reassuring her. Carrie Chu was a woman he had loved, ever so briefly when he was only 18. He was a boy. It was a lifetime ago. When he brought up the idea of inviting Rachel to visit, thinking it would actually help her see that everything would be fine, Xiaoyan raised no objections. He should have known it wouldn't be that easy.
"I know how difficult this must be for you," Gao Liang ventured to say.
"Do you? I'm not so certain you do,"
Xiaoyan said, spritzing her neck with Lumiere Noir.
"Surely you can imagine that this isn't easy for Rachel either," Gao Liang began.
Xiaoyan glared into her husband's eyes in the mirror for a few seconds, and then she smashed the perfume bottle against the table. Gao Liang jumped out of his seat in shock.
"Rachel, Rachel, all you've talked about for weeks is Rachel. But you haven't really listened to a word I've said. You haven't thought about my feelings,"
Xiaoyan screamed. "All I've been trying to do is be considerate of your feelings," he said, trying to remain calm. Xiaoyan glowered at her husband.
"Huh, if you were truly being considerate, you wouldn't expect me to sit there and smile through dinner while you parade your bastard daughter around to a room full of our family and friends. You give me no face."
Gao Liang winced at her words, but he tried to defend himself.
"I've only invited our closest relatives, people who need to know about her."
"Still, for her to meet our family, your parents, Uncle Ku, your sister and her husband and his big mouth, the word will get out in no time and you will have no more face in Beijing. You can kiss any hope of becoming the vice premier goodbye."
"It's precisely to avoid any scandal that I wanted to be open about all this from the very beginning. I didn't want to have any secrets. You're the one who stopped me from telling anyone. Don't you think people will see that I'm only doing the right thing, the honorable thing for my daughter?"
"If you think that's what people will see, you're more naive than I thought. Enjoy your dinner. I'm going to Hong Kong, and Carlton is coming with me."
What? But Carlton's been looking forward to meeting his sister.
He's only been saying that to keep you happy. You have no idea the hell he's been going through. His mood swings, his despair. You only see what you want to see.
I see a great deal more than you think,
Gao Liang said, raising his voice for the first time.
Carlton's depression has more to do with his reckless ways that led to almost being killed in a car wreck. Please don't drag him into the middle of your issues with Rachel.
Don't you see? He is in the very middle of this, whether you like it or not. By accepting your illegitimate daughter, you bring nothing but shame upon him.
You do what you want to ruin your own future,
but I'm not going to let you ruin our sons.
You realize that Rachel and Nick are going to be staying with us for 2 months? I don't know what you think you will accomplish by avoiding them now.
Xiaoyan said through gritted teeth.
I've decided that I cannot, will not, sleep under the same roof as Rachel Chu or Nicholas Yang.
Now what could you possibly have against Nicholas Yang?
He is the son of that two-faced schemer who wormed her way into our lives.
Come on. Eleanor Yang was such a great help to us when Carlton was in the hospital.
That's only because she knew who he was from the very beginning.
Gao Liang shook his head in frustration.
I'm not going to continue arguing with you when you are being this unreasonable.
I'm done arguing too. I have a plane to catch. But mark my words. I will not allow Rachel or Nicholas into this house or any of my houses.
Stop being unreasonable,
Gao Liang exploded.
Where are they supposed to stay?
There are 1,000 hotels in this city.
You're insane. They are landing in a few hours. How can I suddenly tell my daughter she isn't welcome in my house after she's just spent 20 hours on a plane?
You figure it out. But this is my house too. And either you choose them, or you choose your wife and son.
Xiaoyan stormed out, leaving her husband alone in a room that reeked of spice rose and narcissus. Chapter 3 Astrid, Venice, Italy.
Ludovine, I'm not sure if you can hear me, but you're breaking up. I'm on a gondola in the middle of a canal right now. And the connection is very weak. Please text me, and I'll call you back as soon as I get off this boat.
Astrid put her phone away and smiled apologetically at her friend, Contessa Domiella Finzi Contini. She was there for the Venice Biennale, and they were being rowed to the Palazzo Brandolini for a dinner party honoring Anish Kapoor.
This is Venezia. There is never a signal anywhere, much less in the middle of Canal Grande.
Domiella laughed as she tried to stop her pashmina from flapping away in the evening breeze.
Now, finish telling me the story of your amazing find.
Well, I always thought Fortuny only worked with heavier silks and velvets. So when I came across this ball dress in an antique shop in Jakarta, of all places, I didn't know what to think. I thought at first it was some kind of Peranakan wedding gown from the 1920s, but the distinctive pleating caught my eye. And the pattern?
It's his classic Delphos pattern, of course. But this fabric. My God, so light,
Domiella said as she fondled the hem of Astrid's long diaphanous skirt.
And the color. I've never seen this shade of violet before. Obviously hand-painted. Probably by Fortuny himself or his wife, Henriette. How is it that you're always finding these remarkable treasures?
Domiella, I swear to God, they just fined me. I paid about 300,000 rupias for it. That's about $25.
Caso! I'm going to vomit with jealousy. I'm sure any museum would love to have it. Be careful. Dodi will probably want to bite off your body the minute she sees you tonight.
The grand entrance of the Palazzo Brandolini was jammed oar to oar with guests arriving in gondolas, launches, and vaporettos, allowing Astrid to check her phone again. This time, there was an email that read,
Madam, I write to you with grave concerns about recent actions taken in regards to Cassian while you are away. I arrived home after my day off and found that Cassian was locked up in the upstairs hall closet, and Padma was sitting on a stool outside looking at her iPad. I asked her what was happening, and she said, "Sir told me not to let Cassian out." I asked her how long Cassian had been inside the closet, and she said, 4 hours. Your husband was out at a business dinner. When I let Cassian out, the boy was very distressed. Apparently, Michael was punishing Cassian for his latest infraction. The boy was playing with his lightsaber this afternoon and accidentally made a small scratch on the door of the vintage Porsche 550 Spider in the Great Hall. 2 nights ago, Michael sent Cassian to bed without any supper because the boy used a Chinese swear term. Apparently, it is the bad word of the week at Far Eastern Kindergarten, and every boy has been using it, even though they have no idea what they are saying. Ah Lian explained to me what it meant. I assure you, a 5-year-old cannot even begin to comprehend such an act between a father and a daughter. In my view, such disciplinary measures towards Cassian are counterproductive. They do not address the underlying issues and will only cause him to develop new phobias and resentment towards his father. It is past 1 a.m. now, and Cassian still cannot sleep. For the first time since he was 3, he is afraid of the dark again. Ludovine.
Astrid read the email with increasing frustration and sadness. She sent a quick text message to her husband and then allowed herself to be helped out of the gondola after the Contessa. They entered the front hall of the palazzo, which was dominated by an enormous metallic gold concave sculpture suspended from the ceiling.
Bellissima! I wonder, is it one of Anisha's new installations?
Domiella turned to gauge Astrid's reaction and found that she hadn't even noticed the sculpture hovering above her.
Is everything okay?
Astrid sighed. Every time I go away, there seems to be a new problem with Cassian.
He misses his mama.
No, that's not it. I mean, I'm sure he misses me, but I intentionally make these short trips so that Cassian might bond with his father. He's too much of a mama's boy, and I'm trying to change that. I see what that's done to my brother. But every time I go away, there's always a problem. Michael and he just seem to be always at loggerheads.
What is loggerheads?
They fight. Michael doesn't have any tolerance for anything other than perfect behavior from his son. He treats him as if he were in the military. Tell me, when Lucino and Pierpaolo were Cassian's age, if they broke something valuable, what would you do to them?
My God, my sons tore up everything in the house. Furniture, rugs, everything. They put an elbow through a Bronzino one day when they were fighting with each other. Thankfully, it was a portrait of a very ugly woman, some inbred ancestor of my husband's.
And what did you do? Did you punish them?
For what? They are boys.
Exactly, Astrid sighed.
Oh dear, here comes that odious art dealer who keeps trying to sell me a Gursky. I keep telling him that if I had to look at a huge photo of Amsterdam's Schiphol Airport all day, I'd hang myself. Let's go upstairs.
Despite their best efforts, the dealer caught up to them in the grand ballroom on the second floor.
Contessa, how good to see you,
he said in an extremely affected accent, attempting to give her a double-cheek kiss. She only allowed one cheek.
How are your parents these days?
Still alive,
Domiella said wistfully. The man paused for a split second before letting out a guffaw.
Oh, ha ha! This is my friend, Astrid Leong-Tio.
How do you do? He said, pushing up his obnoxiously thick, horn-rimmed spectacles.
He had memorized dossiers on every high-net-worth Asian collector who might attend the Biennale this year. But as he did not recognize Astrid, he continued to zero in on the Contessa.
Contessa, I do hope you will give me a chance to walk you through the German pavilion sometime.
Excuse me, I have to make a brief phone call, Astrid said as she moved toward the outdoor balcony. Domiella looked at the art dealer and shook her head pitifully.
You just missed the chance of a lifetime. Do you know who my friend was?
Her family are the Medicis of Asia, and she's on a buying binge for a museum in Singapore.
I assume she was just some model, the dealer sputtered.
Oh, look! Larry's talking to her. He's obviously done his homework.
Too late for you now,
Domiella tut-tutted. After assuring the art dealer who cornered her on the terrace that she truly had no interest in seeing his big shiny coons, Astrid placed a call to her husband. Michael picked up his cell phone after four rings, sounding sleepy.
Hey, is everything okay?
Yes. You know it's 1:30 in the morning here, right?
I do. But I think you're the only one in the house who's able to sleep.
Ludovine just texted me that Cassian is still up. He's terrified of the dark now. Locking him in the closet.
Really?
Michael let out a sigh of frustration. You don't understand. He's been a little pest all week. Whenever I come home, he goes berserk.
He's acting out to get your attention. He wants to play.
The Great Hall is not a playroom. My cars are not toys. He has to learn to control himself. At his age, I was not jumping around like an orangutan all day.
He is an active, high-spirited kid, like his father was.
Michael snorted. If I had acted the way he does, I would have been whipped by my pa. 10 strokes on my ass with his rotan.
A rattan cane popularly used by generations of Singaporean fathers, school principals, and after-school Chinese tutors for corporal punishment. Mrs. Chan, I still hate you.
Well, thank God you're not your father, then.
Cassian is a wild child, and this is the time for him to learn some discipline.
He is disciplined. Do you see how much calmer he is when I'm there? I think you would get much farther if you would give him more of your attention. And I don't mean sitting by the pool with your laptop while he plays. Take him to the zoo. Take him to gardens by the bay. He just wants to be with his father.
So now you're trying to make me feel guilty.
Darling, I'm not trying to make you feel anything, but don't you see? My being away is a special opportunity for you to spend more quality time with him. He'll be in primary one next year, and then the whole academic race begins. He's growing up so fast. This is a time in his life you'll never get back.
Okay la, you win. I'm a bad father. Astrid balled up some of the fabric of her skirt in frustration.
This is not about winning, and you're not a bad father. It's just...
Astrid began before Michael interrupted her. I'll try to do better tomorrow while you're having fun in Venice. Have a Bellini on me.
You're not being fair. You know I promised to take this trip for the museum. We're trying to make some important things happen here for the good of Singapore.
I spent most of my waking hours with Cassian all year, and you are the one who travels 80% of the year. Excuse me for working my ass off to ensure a future for my family. While you're working for the good of Singapore, everything I'm doing is for Cassian and you.
Michael, we're not going to go hungry anytime soon, and you know that.
Michael was silent for a long moment. You know what the real problem is, Astrid? The problem is that you've never had to worry about money a single day in your life. You don't realize how hard it is to make money. You blow your nose and money comes out. You've never understood the fear that normal people have. Well, I was motivated by that fear, and I built my own fortune out of it. I want to instill in my son that same fear. He is going to inherit a great deal of money one day, and he needs to know that he has to earn it. He has to have boundaries. Otherwise, he's just going to end up like your brother Henry, or any one of your pompous and titled cousins who haven't worked a day in their lives but feel like they own the world.
Now you're just being mean, Michael. That's an extremely unfair generalization.
You know I speak the truth. At the end of the day, your son made a decision to damage my car. Your son made the decision to use filthy language. And you just continue making excuses for him.
He's only 5,
Astrid said, raising her voice. And that's my point, honey. If we don't correct his problems now, we're never going to. Astrid sighed deeply.
Michael, I really don't want to get into a big fight with you over this right now.
I don't either. I want to get some sleep. Some of us have to work in the morning.
With that, Michael hung up on her.
Astrid put her phone back into her purse and leaned against the balustrade, feeling frustrated. The blue hour was upon the city, and the water began to shimmer in the reflection of the lights coming on in all the palazzos across the Grand Canal.
This is ridiculous. I've just been standing at one of the most beautiful spots on the planet getting into a long-distance argument over my son.
Domiella led a group of people out onto the terrace, and Astrid recognized her friend Grégoire Leherme-Pierre among them.
Astrid, I couldn't believe it when Domiella told me you were here too. What are you doing in Venice? I didn't know this art crowd was your thing,
Grégoire said, giving Astrid his usual Parisian quadruple kiss.
I'm just soaking in the sights,
Astrid said distractedly, still trying to collect herself after the call.
Of course. Now surely you know my friends here? Pascal Pang and Isabelle Wu of Hong Kong?
Astrid greeted the chic couple. Pascal wore an immaculately tailored suit that had a slight iridescence, while Isabelle was elegantly clad in a strapless black Christian Dior dress with a flared knee-length skirt. Her hair was swept up into a Grecian chignon, and around her neck was a striking Michel Ocadoner gold necklace in the shape of palm fronds. Suddenly, Astrid had a realization that the two of them weren't a couple. Could this Isabelle Wu standing in front of her be Charlie's wife? The lady caught Astrid's flash of recognition and said simply,
I know who you are.
Grégoire chuckled.
See, it's always such a small world when you're around.
It's a pleasure to meet you at last,
Astrid said to Isabelle, adding,
Charlie told me all about your fundraising efforts for M Plus Museum. I think it's terrific what you're doing. It's high time Hong Kong has a world-class contemporary art space.
Thank you. Yes. I believe you saw Charlie recently, didn't you?
Isabelle asked.
Yes. I'm sorry you weren't able to join us on our California road trip.
Isabelle paused, taken aback. California? She knew that Charlie had bumped into Astrid at the Pinnacle Ball, but she knew nothing about a road trip.
So, you had a nice time then?
Oh yes, we were planning on going to Sausalito, but then we decided on the spur of the moment to drive down the coast to Monterey and Big Sur.
Let me guess. Did he take you to Post Ranch Inn for dinner?
She continued breezily.
We went there for lunch, actually. Heavenly there, isn't it?
Yes, you could say that. Well, it was good to meet you at last, Astrid Leong.
Isabelle turned to re-enter the ballroom with Pascal, while Astrid remained on the balcony with Domiella and Grégoire. The summer heat still lingered in the soft evening breeze, and in the distance, the bells of the Basilica di San Marco began to peal. Pascal suddenly reappeared on the balcony and said hurriedly to Grégoire,
Isabelle needs to leave this instant. Are you staying or coming?
Is everything okay?
Astrid asked. Pascal gave Astrid a glazier stare.
So nice of you to rub it in Isabel's face like that.
I'm sorry? Astrid said, confused. Pascal inhaled deeply, trying to contain his rage.
I don't know who you think you are, but I've never seen anyone as brazen as you. Did you have to make it so apparent to Isabel that you've been fucking her husband up and down the California coast?
Domiella gasped and grabbed Astrid's shoulder. Astrid shook her head wildly.
No, no, there's been a big misunderstanding. Charlie and I are just old friends.
Old friends?
Huh.
Until tonight, Isabel wasn't even sure you were still alive.
Chapter 4 The Bows, Three on the Bund, Shanghai. The hotel's Brewster Green Rolls-Royce was waiting in the driveway to ferry Nick and Rachel to dinner. But with their destination just 6 blocks away, they decided to walk. It was an unseasonably cool evening for early June, and as they strolled along the legendary riverfront boulevard known as the Bund, Nick could still remember a morning in Hong Kong when he was around 6 years old. His parents took him on a drive far out into the countryside of Kowloon's new territories, up a winding mountain road. At the top of the mountain was a lookout point crowded with tourists, snapping away at the view and lining up to use the swiveling metal binoculars that had been mounted on a rusty metal railing. Nick's father lifted him up so that he could see through the viewfinder.
Can you see it? That's the border of China. That's where your great-great-grandparents came from, Philip Young told his son. Take a good look, because we aren't able to go past that border.
Why not?
Nick had asked.
It's a communist country, and our Singapore passports are stamped No Entry into the People's Republic of China. But one day, hopefully, you will be able to go.
Nick squinted at the almost barren, muddy brown landscape. He could discern some roughly plowed fields and irrigation ditches, but not much else. Where was the border? He was trying to find a great wall, a moat, or any sort of proper demarcation to indicate where the British Crown Colony of Hong Kong ended and the People's Republic of China began. But there was nothing. The viewfinder lenses were grimy, and his armpits hurt from the grip of his father's large hands. Nick asked to be put down, and made a beeline for the lady selling snacks in the concrete hut nearby. A Cornetto ice cream cone was far more interesting than the view of China. China was boring. But the China of Nick's childhood bore no resemblance to the incredible sights that surrounded him in every direction now. Shanghai was a vast, sprawling megalopolis on the banks of the Huangpu River, the Paris of the East, where hyperbole-defying skyscrapers vied for attention with stately early 20th century European facades. Nick began pointing out some of his favorite buildings to Rachel.
That's the Broadway Mansions Hotel right across the bridge.
I love its hulking Gothic silhouette. So classic Art Deco.
Did you know Shanghai has the largest concentration of Art Deco architecture in the world?
I had no idea. All the buildings around us are just jaw-dropping. I mean, look at that crazy skyline.
Rachel gestured excitedly to the intimidating expanse of skyscrapers on the other side of the river.
And that's just Putong. It was all pretty much farmland, and none of those buildings even existed 10 years ago. Now it's a financial district that makes Wall Street look like a fishing village.
That structure with the two huge round orbs is the Oriental Pearl Radio and TV Tower.
Doesn't it look like something out of Buck Rogers in the 25th century? Nick remarked.
Buck Rogers?
Rachel gave him a blank look. It was a 1980s TV show set in the future, and all the buildings looked like some 10-year-old's fantasy of another galaxy.
You probably didn't watch any of the bad 80s shows that came to Singapore years after they bombed in the US. Like Manimal. Do you remember that one? It was about this guy who could change into different types of animals, like an eagle, a snake, or a jaguar.
And what was the point of that?
He was fighting the bad guys, of course. What else would he be doing?
Rachel smiled,
But Nick could tell that underneath their banter, she was getting more and more nervous as they got closer to their destination. Nick stared up at the moon for a moment and made a wish to the universe. He wished for the dinner to go smoothly. Rachel had waited all these years and come all this way to meet her family, and he hoped her dreams would be fulfilled tonight. They soon reached Three on the Bund, an elegant post-Renaissance-style building crowned by a majestic cupola. Nick and Rachel took the elevator up to the fifth floor and found themselves in a dramatic crimson-walled foyer. A hostess stood in front of a gold-inlaid fresco that depicted a beautiful maiden in flowing robes flanked by two gigantic prostrating warriors.
"Welcome to the Wampur Club,"
the woman said in English. "Thank you. We are here for the bow party," Nick said.
"Of course. Please follow me."
The hostess, dressed in an impossibly tight yellow cheongsam, walked them past the main dining room packed with chic Shanghai families enjoying their meals and down a hallway lined with Art Deco club chairs and green glass lamps. Along one side of the hallway was another gold and silver carved fresco, and the hostess pushed open one of the wall panels to reveal a private dining room.
"Please make yourselves comfortable. You are the first ones to arrive," she said.
"Oh, okay," Rachel said. Nick wasn't sure whether she sounded more surprised or relieved. The private room was luxuriously appointed with a grouping of armchairs upholstered in raw silk on one end and a large round table with lacquered rosewood chairs by the window. Rachel noted that the table was set for 12. She wondered whom she would be meeting tonight. Aside from her father, his wife Xiaoyan, and her half-brother Carlton, what other relatives would be joining them?
"Isn't it interesting that since we've arrived, practically everyone has addressed us in English instead of Mandarin?" Rachel commented.
"Not really. They can tell from the minute we walk in that we're not native Chinese. You're an Amazon compared to most of the women here, and everything else about us is different. We don't dress like the locals, and we carry ourselves in a completely different way. When I was teaching in Chengdu 9 years ago, my students all knew I was an American, but they still spoke to me in Mandarin."
"That was Chengdu. Shanghai has always been a sophisticated international city, so they are much more used to seeing pseudo-Chinese like us here."
"Well, we're certainly not as dressed up as many of the locals I've seen today."
"Yeah, these days, we're the bumpkins," Nick joked.
As the minutes ticked by, Rachel sat on one of the sofas and began to flip through the tea menu.
"It says here they have over 50 premium teas from across China, served in traditional ceremonies in their private tea rooms."
"Maybe we'll get to sample some tonight," Nick replied, as he paced around the room pretending to admire the contemporary Chinese art.
"Can you just sit down and chill? Your pacing is making me nervous."
"Sorry," Nick said. He took a seat across from her and started flipping through the tea menu too. They sat in silence for another 10 minutes, until Rachel could take it no more.
"Something's gone wrong. Do you think we've been stood up?"
"I'm sure they're just stuck in traffic."
Nick tried to sound calm, although he was secretly fretting as well.
"I don't know. I have a strange feeling about this. Why would my father book a room so early when no one showed up for more than half an hour?"
"In Hong Kong, people are notoriously late to everything. I'm thinking Shanghai must be the same.
It's a matter of face. No one wants to be the first to show up, in case they look too eager. So they try to outdo one another in lateness. The last one to arrive is deemed the most important."
"That's totally ridiculous," Rachel snorted.
"You think?"
"I feel a similar thing happens in New York, though it's not quite as overt. At your department meetings, isn't the dean or some star professor always the last to show up? Or the chancellor just drops in at the tail end because he's too important to sit through the whole meeting?"
"That's not the same."
"It isn't. Posturing is posturing. Hong Kongers have just elevated it to an art form," Nick opined.
"Well,
I can see that happening for a business lunch, but this is a family dinner. They're really quite late.
I was once at a dinner in Hong Kong with my relatives, and I ended up waiting over an hour before everyone else got there. Eddie was the last to arrive, of course. I think you're getting paranoid a little too quickly. Don't worry. They'll be here. A few minutes later, the door slid open, and a man in a dark navy suit entered the room.
Mr. and Mrs. Yang, I'm the manager. I have a message for you from Mr. Bao.
Nick's heart sank.
What now?
Rachel looked at the manager anxiously, but before he had a chance to say anything, they were distracted by a commotion in the hallway. They poked their heads out of the doorway and saw someone surrounded by a crowd of gawkers. It was a girl in her early 20s, strikingly attired in a figure-hugging strapless white dress, with an ornately sequined red matador cape flung casually over her milk-white shoulders. Two burly security guards and a woman with a faux-hawk hairstyle wearing a pinstripe suit attempted to clear the way, while proper teenage girls, who had minutes before been enjoying polite posh dinners with their families, had suddenly transformed into shrieking fans taking pictures with their camera phones.
"Is she a movie star?" Nick asked the manager, staring at the girl as she posed glamorously with her fans, with long, voluminous raven hair piled up into a loose beehive, a perfectly sculpted ski-jump nose, and bee-stung lips. She seemed larger than life, like a Chinese Ava Gardner.
"No, that's Colette Bing. She's famous for her clothes," the manager explained.
Colette finished autographing some dinner napkins and headed straight toward them.
"Ah, I'm glad I found you,"
she said to Rachel, as if she was greeting an old friend. "Are you talking to me?" Rachel stared at her, utterly stunned.
"Of course. Come on, let's get out of here."
I think you've mistaken me for someone else. We're meeting some people for dinner here," Rachel began.
"You're Rachel, right? The Bao sent me. The plans have changed. Come with me and I'll explain everything," Colette said.
She took Rachel by the arm and began walking her out of the room. The girls in the hallway started squealing again and taking more pictures.
"Where is your service elevator?"
the woman with the faux hawk demanded of the manager. Nick followed along, baffled by everything that was happening. They were shuffled into an elevator and then down another service corridor on the ground floor. But as soon as the doors opened onto Guangdong Road, they were met by the blinding flashbulbs from a pack of paparazzi. Colette's security guards tried to clear a path through the phalanx of photographers.
"Back off! Back the fuck off!"
they yelled at the jostling pack.
"This is nuts," Nick said,
almost colliding with an overzealous photographer who had jumped right in front of him. The woman in the faux hawk turned to him and said,
"You must be Nick. I'm Roxanne Ma, Colette's personal assistant."
"Hi, Roxanne. Does this happen everywhere Colette goes?"
"Yes, but this is nothing. These were only photographers. You should see what happens when she walks down Nanjing West Road."
"Why is she so famous?"
"Colette is one of China's foremost fashion icons. Between Weibo and WeChat, she has more than 35 million followers."
"Did you say 35 million?
Nick was incredulous.
"Yes, I'm afraid your picture is going to be everywhere tomorrow. Just look straight ahead and keep smiling."
Two large Audi SUVs suddenly pulled up, almost running into one of the photographers. The bodyguards quickly hustled Colette, Rachel, and Nick toward the first car, shutting the door firmly behind them before the swarming photographers could take any more shots.
"Are you okay?" Colette asked.
"Besides my barbecued retinas, I think I'm fine," Nick said from the front passenger seat.
"That was intense," Rachel said, trying to catch her breath. "Things have really gotten out of control in Shanghai. It all started after my L China cover,"
Colette explained in a carefully modulated British accent, tinged with the staccato tones of a native Mandarin speaker. "Still on high alert?" Nick asked. Where are you taking us?
Before Colette could answer, the car came to a sudden halt a few blocks away from the restaurant. The car door opened, and a young man jumped in beside Rachel. She let out a quick gasp.
Sorry,